Hey, this is Matt McGarry. This episode is going to be a little bit different than the average podcast that we do on this feed. This is actually not a podcast. It's a recording of a live event that we did with Ryan Sager and Jesse Watkins. They are the founders of Who Sponsors Stuff, which is an advertising intelligence tool. They track over 500 newsletters and see who's advertising in those newsletters, who's buying ads. And they have a lot of data and trends on the state of the newsletter industry. So we did a talk in my private community called Owl Access about the state of newsletter advertising in 2024. And we had a lot of people from my community join live to ask Ryan and Jesse questions. So you'll hear from them. You'll hear from me. You'll hear from Ryan and Jesse in this podcast. And the reason I'm publishing this is to give you a sneak peek of some of the many things that are inside Newsletter Operator All Access. It is a vetted community membership and coaching program for advanced media founders. We do live events like these 2 to 3 times per month. Members also get access to one-on-one coaching and consulting with me, and they get to join a large and thriving community of advanced newsletter operators. We have people on there like 1440 Media, Workweek, 6 a.m. City, The Hustle, Houck's News, The Average Joe, and many, many more. And it's not just newsletters. We have a lot of people who have an agency or a consultancy or even an investment fund that are focused on growing their newsletters and growing their audience online. So if you want to learn more about All Access and see what's inside of that, you can go to the link in the description below this podcast or on YouTube, or you can go to allaccess.newsletteroperator.com and learn more there. So without further ado, we'll get into today's episode. Okay. Ryan, Jesse, thanks for joining. We got a couple of people from the community, and like I said, this is going to be published to our podcast feed later. And I wanted to do a little chat about newsletter sponsorships, your platform, the state of the newsletter advertising industry. So the way we typically do this is I got a couple questions for you to get to first, kind of warm things up, get the juices flowing, and then we'll have some questions from Nathan, Joanna, and other people that have joined, and then we'll kind of go from there. Does that sound good?
Wonderful. Thanks for having us, Matt.
Cool. And then before we get started, I wanted to go ahead and mention the newsletter conference because it's coming up really soon. And instead of mentioning that at the very end, let's just cover that now. So I'm going to be there speaking. I'm really excited to go and see a ton of people from our industry and our space. Hey, you want to like share kind of briefly what that is, like why you decided to put an event and what it's going to be about and when it is too?
Yeah, absolutely. It's May 3rd in New York City at the Time Center. We're very excited with, Matt is one of our, prominent speakers there. We've also got Adam Ryan, Jacob Donnelly, Erica Burkhardt, who does growth on 1440, Rachel Schindler from Punchbowl News, just a tremendous speaker list, which people go check out. So yeah, I mean, we've just in this space for a long time, people have been sort of saying for years now, oh, somebody should do a newsletter conference. We really need a conference. There's nowhere to meet people. We started convening people with our dinner series, Dine and Deliver, that we do with Dan Oshinsky, and we've got some attendees from there on here. And, we just found that, when we opened up and kind of raised the flag to apply for people to apply to that dinner series, like 700 people came inbound. So there's a huge, urge for people to network and to convene in this space. And there's really nothing that sort of scratches that itch. There's the Online News Association conference, but that's really almost no newsletter presence at this point. And, there's email marketing conferences, which are obviously very different than what, all of us on this call do for the most part. We just wanted to get a bunch of awesome newsletter people in a room and give them a chance to hear really useful, really interesting content from the stage and, get together. We're going to have a VIP dinner the night before for folks who want to have a lovely dinner on a location we'll be announcing on Thursday, but lovely venue with a rooftop. And then the day of the conference and also some after conference networking drinks as well. So a lot of chance to meet and greet everyone in the industry.
That's cool. And so is the newsletterconference.com, is that the URL?
It is. It was amazingly open when we went to look for it. So it is exactly thenewsletterconference.com. You will find it immediately.
Okay, that sounds good. So to get into some of the stuff I wanted to talk about. So you had this platform called Who Sponsor Stuff where you track 500 plus newsletters and many, many more sponsors that advertise in those newsletters. And you have really unique data insights on who's spending money in the email advertising space, more so than just about anyone. So I want to talk about some of the interesting data and trends that you're seeing there and just
based off of your observations and insights in general. So I want to start at the high level, like more beginner stuff, and then get more advanced and then open up to questions very soon. But what types of companies are advertising newsletters? Like, what's the most common categories? And by that I mean, you know, SaaS, B2B, consumer, et cetera. Is there a pattern or a trend?
I mean, you know, it definitely is both B2B and B2C. Yeah, if I had to say one is sort of doing better than the other, I think B2B is doing really well right now. A lot of B2B SaaS advertising, a lot of stuff that shows up in like the industry doc newsletters and the whole Workweek family, that has been really booming. And B2C is I think back to being a little stronger than it was last year, kind of with the sort of recession that never happened that all the marketers were pulling back spending on. But you do still see this push to performance. There really is a pretty big push to everyone wanting to do CPC and CPA deals, which is obviously not ideal for publishers and is not something we encourage folks to avoid that when they can.
What are some examples? So for someone who doesn't know a lot about who advertises in this space, can you share some examples like top 10 advertisers in newsletters?
Oh, God. So, you know, Smart Asset advertises a ton. Masterworks advertises a ton. Finance Buzz, which is under the umbrella of Launch Potato, does a ton. Those are some of the real top ones. And again, those are more B2C. On the B2B, it varies a ton, because it's obviously by a lot more verticalized.
Yeah, that one's harder to pin down. Let's see here. Do you have any sense of what is ad spend in the space? How does that look in 2024 compared to last year? Or can you see if there's more advertisers or less coming in? Do you have any data on growth of newsletter advertising in general year over year?
Sure. So, you know, aggregates, I think that we have not seen a slowdown in the number of new advertisers, right? We track daily who's new in the newsletter space. So as you mentioned, Who Sponsors Stuff tracks like 500 newsletters, and we send out daily alerts of like, these are the new people who showed up today in the newsletter space. And it is really consistently in this sort of 10 to 20, new advertisers a day. Obviously some of those are small people who buy a one-off thing and don't appear again, but it's a mix of people who do that and then people who become like regular newsletter advertisers over time. So that's been remarkably consistent in our time watching the space.
So you have this like chart you published back in 2022 of like where the spend is in the space by which category. Do you have any data on what newsletter niches or categories are getting the most advertisers right now or growing? Are there any categories that more advertisers have entered into recently?
I mean, I think we're still seeing the AI sort of replacing crypto as the hot thing in newsletters. There's obviously, I guess we're in a new crypto boom now. So we've typically found that advertising to lag by like a quarter from how the crypto market is doing. But, AI is the new crypto. And even if a company is not AI, they're making some sort of AI slanted pitch for what they do. So that's certainly the one. We see a ton of healthcare obviously come through. That's just a huge advertising category. And but those are really the main ones that have seen the most fluctuation. Again, I think crypto will probably in 3 months from now, I'll say crypto is back and crazy amount of advertising, but usually lags a little bit.
I've got two more questions and I want to open them up. Are there any, just in general across the stuff that you see, any interesting data trends you're seeing across the 500 plus newsletters that have happened recently? Anything come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, again, it is that push to performance, and it's also just like a ton of the inventory gets taken up by like BI Boosts and Sparkloop partner stuff. So there definitely are a lot of newsletters using that to generate at least a baseline of some of their revenue. And just generally, it looks a lot like everyone we're talking to, our clients. We work with about 60 publishers, everyone from like Morning Brew, Daily Upside, down to much smaller indie pubs. Everyone is saying Q1 was obviously just a huge comeback and relief after 2023.
That's good. Can you elaborate and give an example of like the push to performance? What does that mean? What does that look like?
Yeah, Jesse's a little bit more on the trenches on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I can feel that. Yeah, so push to performance, I think in a lot of ways, you have especially on the consumer front, like more and more advertisers pushing for performance-based campaigns. So that can be a variation of like a cost per click campaign, rev share, affiliate, any kinds of those revenue models. And you see like a lot more of that in consumer-facing newsletters, right, compared to a few years ago. The reason for that and like the reason for so much explosion there in performance-based advertisers, I think, is the scaling of ad networks, right? Like if you want to scale an ad network, I think one of the easiest lift ways to do so is building out like a performance-based ad network, which sort of falls in line with what you're seeing on the consumer front, right? If I have an ESG that's just going to onboard a ton of new consumer-facing newsletters, then naturally I'm going to be moving the space towards more performance-based advertisers.
And is there any most common method is like cost per click most common or, you know, affiliate commission?
Yeah, I would say like your cost per clicks are, you know, your most prevalent, right? More so than like an affiliate or a rev share deal. As far as like onboarding any of these types of like revenue models or like onboarding a sponsor that runs with any of these, you know, whichever is most advantageous could vary depending on your audience and the verticals.
Yeah, I've seen a lot more cost per click. Do you have any insights or data on what those benchmarks look like? You know, what advertisers want to are paying per click? And I know this varies a ton across different niches, right? So it might be hard to pin down, but what do you think?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, this would be more like anecdotal based on like feedback I get from like publishers directly. A lot of like CPC models, like it's been trending down, right? So where you would have seen like a, you know, a $3 or $4 CPC deals are trending down a bit to like, you know, $1.50, $2 is sort of what we see. But again, like for a consumer facing newsletter, like my benchmarks were always, I want to be somewhere between a $2 to $4 CPC for your general, like low CPM, lower CPM running brand.
Yeah. How should publishers think about pricing now? I get this question a lot. People saw in their first couple dozen ads, like, do they price it based off of CPM opens, based off of an average CPC of what they're sending per ad? Or something else. And again, this also varies depending on the niche, of course, with everything we're talking about. But how do you recommend people think about pricing their ads?
Yeah. So for pricing, like the way I like to think of it is like a few things, especially when starting out, like the biggest things when I want to go to market with like the sponsorship product is to build like sustainable sponsorship program where I have advertisers that are coming back and I know like I'm within market value for my product. A good way to determine that is to understand, like, the newsletter channel is largely a transactional sponsorship space, right? Like every sponsor that's running is trying to either convert directly or they have some KPI or some metric that they're trying to achieve through this campaign. A lot of times, the way they can figure out their conversions are going to be based on this is the type of audience that I have and this is how much traffic we're going to be able to send you. So the way I like to initially come up with the value for the sponsorship product would be a multiple off of like your raw ad click number. So, you know, this is going to vary depending on like your vertical and niche. This is just a general rule I use. If I'm a consumer facing newsletter, and like I said earlier, I want to fall someplace between $2 and $4 on that CPC number. Right. I know that I could deliver. That's probably the value here for like this lower consumer thing, like maybe a consumer watch company. If I'm going to send 500 clicks, then, you know, I might want to set my rate card at $1,000 or $1,500, bundle things together. And I like to present everything as flat fee. Like I know that's getting more and more difficult now with the prevalence of performance based, but I still would always recommend setting a rate card, making it flat fee, and negotiate down off of there.
Very helpful. That's one example of a B2C newsletter. Any examples of like CPC ranges for like prosumer or for B2B? I know B2B can vary so much too, but what does that look
like? Yeah, so I would just like really jack up whatever that multiple is. And B2B, again, like there's huge variance depending on like vertical. And like this is all assuming like standard, like I think when I say a standard engaged audience, I'm talking, you know, really like a 60% open rate, like highly engaged audience here. Yeah, you would just keep going up. Like the prosumer kind of market, you might be like $6 to $8 as that multiple. And then B2B again is like a huge variance depending on the.
Cool. Any, I want to open up to questions from people on this call. I got some questions I might ask at the very end, but I know we got a lot of people here. Nathan, Erica, Paul, let us know if y'all have anything. And feel free to jump into it. We don't have a lot of people, so you can just jump in anytime.
Yeah, I'll go. Let's see. What do you guys know about the like real estate and alts vertical in sponsorships? I'll leave it general at first.
Yeah, you mean like real estate investment, like alternative investments?
Yeah, that could be like Olds.co, it could be Vincent, it could be, there's a couple other logos I would need to think of, but yeah, that kind of that space, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we have coverage in like all these spaces, generally like alternative finance investments. Like I ran a lot of alternative investment sponsors back at the company that Ryan and I had built out like newsletter revenue for. Delivering for like some of the alternative investment products could really vary, which I always thought was like super interesting. So like the performance could be very reliant upon your ad copy and like in-house how you're managing those campaigns.
Yeah. What's the, I work with a couple of folks at Olds, and I guess like part of their sales process also relies heavily on agencies, and there are agencies that are specific to finance that are not necessarily kind of the Mad Revs and the other kind of more general newsletter sponsorship, right? Because finance and all, it's just sort of its own world. What's the market map there? Like who kind of does that stuff? Who does ad sales over there?
Yeah. So just ad sales generally for like different orgs. Like, so if you want to get into like ad sales by like vertical, it could vary hugely, right? Like, so I was running, when I was doing this at Ladders, you know, I was running sales there. I had multiple third party orgs for like different film partners. Like Katie at Mad Rib, I know, definitely works with some financial partners, but if you're trying to stand up revenue there in like the alternative space, you want to use as many different outlets as possible. And for newsletter generally, there isn't, on the agency front, it's not quite as clear, or it's not clear at all. Sorry. It's even less clear than it would be for like any other channel, right? Like I don't necessarily know, like we could take a bigger brand as an example, like let's say Huggies at Kimberly Clark, like, oh, who's their AOR and like who's the point person for email activations on that brand? There might not be, right? So it could be very campaign specific. And you'll see that like especially in the finance vertical. And so it's like fighting that at both sides of it on newsletter, if that makes sense.
Got it. Yeah. So it's not like CJ Affiliates or someone like controls all newsletter spend. Like it's pretty diversified.
Yeah, it's very, very like diversified and even siloed in some instances. And just again, like anecdotally, like a lot of feedback I'll get from clients or if we're talking through an ad deal or like they might be talking to a brand that it could be several different agencies that could have activated that bot.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not right. It's what Jesse's saying. It's not like, oh, just talk to the CJ of finance, right? It's there doesn't really seem to be someone who's like that. It's very atomized. And even in stuff where there are more definite agencies, we always recommend going direct and they'll kick you. You know, if they want to run it through an agency, they will kick you over there. But, you know, just thinking of like a, not a real estate one, but like Cask-X or somebody who does, buying whiskey casks as an alternative investment, like they'll handle it directly. And then some of them will kick you over to, you know, somebody who runs it for them. But you're sort of always best starting brand side.
Does this space seem to be a lot more diversified or decentralized than average? Like, are there any big players like Nathan was alluding to that control a lot of ad spend? Does that exist in some cases or not?
Not entirely, really. So it's interesting. I think that's what people are attempting with like the ad network builds ultimately, right? Is this idea that I have all this scale. I have millions and millions and millions of subscribers here across my entire network. So here's a way to reach these end users. But I think because of like what makes the newsletter channel work for sponsorships, that one-to-one, the voice of the publisher, like all these things that the skim in the morning brew kind of invented and did really, really well early on. I think that's kind of why it's so fragmented and there isn't necessarily like one central source for a buying inventory. Because what makes it work is that very one-to-one unique kind of bespoke ad offer.
Yeah. And that was Matt's piece the other day, right? You know, don't ever use the ad copy they send you. So the agency's jobs, and a lot of times, is to send out that creative. But like the newsletter space, as Jesse was saying, like what works in the newsletter space is not to use that off the rack creative. It's to like be writing in your own voice, be writing to a friend, be writing the way you write to your audience. You know, that's what Maureen Brew does so well. I see we've got our friends from 1440 on the line. It's what they do tremendously well. So yeah, we always recommend going that way as opposed to getting stuck in that agency world.
Got it. Joanna, did you have something? I think I might have interrupted you earlier.
I just had a quick question back to advertisers moving into this performance model more so, or at least backing up into a CPC that they're happy with. Are you seeing advertisers more so pay out on a unique CPC versus a total click CPC? Because in my experience, I've seen both, and I'm just not sure what the actual like standard for most people are these days with agencies.
Yeah. So on that, I don't know. I wouldn't be able to answer like what the standard is on that. Obviously, like I guess you would take like generally on the performance stuff for me and even CPC. Like, by saying, obviously you would prefer to have total CPC, not just unique. But even that aside, like for me though, the issue with performance does become like your risk assumption, right? Like you at the assist, you guys already put in this time and equity and money and all these things to build an audience now. So I think there should be like some exchange of like, they have to pay to access that work that you've already done in advertising. And I think we're getting away from that a bit. So with all that said, like, obviously I would always push for unique or total clicks on this. And I think like a lot of ways you could kind of paint that picture is like, well, these are people that are coming back and that could convert well.
I feel like also back to what you shared on the B2C CPC rate, you said anywhere between like 2 to 4 would be a good deal. But I'm actually seeing with more platforms, things under like $1, like 30 cent, 50 cent CPCs. Are you actually seeing people command that $2 to $4 CPC rate from B2C advertisers?
So to answer that, I have also heard this sub $1 CPC on a call this morning, actually, with a publisher. I was actually kind of shocked to hear that. Seems very low. I would like to like further clarify when I'm saying 2 to 4, like my entire model on pricing and doing it that way is to present it as a flat fee. I'm never telling the advertiser like, hey, this is what it backs out to on a CPC basis. I mean, they could do that math, but for me, it's more so like, okay, my rate card for each send is $2,000. I will bundle 4 of these together and sell it to you for $6,000 or $5,500 or whatever it is. Would that, like, if that clarifies a bit on the CPC, my thoughts on like, you know, I'm not necessarily saying, oh, you're going to get the $2 to $4. Just historically, I know a general consumer brand, like, you know, if I'm selling watches that are just general consumer, like a Vincero back in the day, I know like, if these brands are running their campaigns between $1 and $4, they're running ROI positive campaigns and are likely to renew. So that's my philosophy on pricing for that.
And as far as actual CPC, I mean, you are seeing those rates. If you look at something like Babbel, you know, they're definitely doing those rates on. And again, it goes by audience quality. If you're coming, yeah, and I know you're not at the assist, but if you were somebody coming in with a 20% open rate post Apple MPP and it's a low quality audience, like, yeah, that's going to be really tough. If you're coming in with 60 to 80% open rates in the, you know, sort of modern metrics, yeah, I mean, there's definitely verticals where that's possible. And especially on consumer finance, right? It always comes down to that anything in finance and investing is going to, even if it's purely consumer finance and investing, is going to have those much higher LTVs for the advertiser and command the higher CPCs. That was, Jesse said, always try and push not to be talking in terms of CPCs whenever possible.
Let's see here. We got some couple more people on the call. Just to say again, feel free to jump in anytime. We don't have a ton of people, so you don't have to raise your hand or anything. If you have a question related to ads, jump in. I got a ton more, but I want to hold those until later.
I have a question. So I know a little bit about you guys. I think I talked with Isabella from your team a couple months ago. I'm just curious, what are like the differences in, that you know of in data sets available for you guys versus OpenRage, which I think is Wooter's new project, and kind of like other stuff that's like on the market? I'm just curious what data is there and kind of how you think about using that data in useful ways as a newsletter to activate against it, right? To go do cold outreach and other things to win sponsors.
Yeah. Yeah. So on that, for one, we are meticulous. We were kind of early in this. So back up our background, like Ryan and Jamie built at a company called Ladders. He had built out what was called Ladders News. So everything about content there. I came on monetized. We were early in newsletters, so we kind of knew like the important data points and what really mattered. So as we went to market with who sponsors stuff, we kind of knew like, okay, this is what really matters, right? So having the ad assets, understanding the fully, like the marketing funnel, basically. Every ad that I'm tracking on who sponsors stuff, we know here's where the ad was placed. Here's where the ad directed you to. Here are all the ad creatives and making all that searchable, filterable. And then just the human element. We are all manual. Our entire build is manual. So we don't really have the mistakes. We're running AI pilots all the time with people, but accuracy there is really, really bad. So, you know, just the meticulous combing through with humans, we're not missing any placements. I know here's a primary, secondary, tertiary ad placements, whereas I feel like a lot of the, I won't call them competitors because they're not really competitive products, but, you know, the lower tiered products, I think, like, just miss often on the accuracy of the data. And that's based on a lot of the feedback that we hear as well.
I've heard people really like seeing the ad creative, and so they can just customize their pitch so much more. I've heard that from Katie Huff and a lot of other people I've talked to. That takes a lot of time to aggregate. Cool. Any other questions? Cool. Anybody feel free to interrupt, but I've got a couple more things I wanted to talk about. And if these become topics of discussion, anybody can jump in anytime. I want to have more of a discussion here rather than just an interview. I want to talk about, like, how do you become not commoditized? How do you not become just, I'm a $2 CPC and, or this person's a $5 CPC. Like, what makes an advertiser get excited about working with you? Is it details about your audience, other factors? Like, what are those unique selling propositions we should have as publishers? So when we go to an advertiser, they're less sensitive about what the CPC is because they know it will be a great partnership for them.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it actually plays right into like something you had just flagged about like Katie Huff loving like ad creatives. I think for me, on like the ad sales side of it, understanding this brand and like how they move, how their funnel is set up, where they're advertising. You know, the more you work in the space, you get an understanding of, okay, if this advertiser has ran, they're running 1440 Morning Brew scan, they're running at these newsletters. If I have an understanding of where they're running, the type of messaging that they're running at each of these brands, and like, I understand like insightfully why, and I could communicate that to, you know, the marketing director on the other side, or if I have a specific campaign and a very specific angle for, hey, saw you guys are working on this product line. You tried this on this newsletter. I think with our audience, this would resonate really, really well based on XYZ. I think coming to them with the mind of a marketing coordinator or marketing director, whatever it is for their brand, and really understanding the sponsors like funnel and metrics. I think that's really what helps those conversations.
And just high engagement. I mean, that's the hardest thing to build and the hardest thing to maintain as you scale. But, I'll keep, calling out 1440 and how well they've done it. I mean, their ad click rates are just remarkable. And like, you know, having an audience that is that engaged and that, you know, interested in clicking on your content, is just huge. In different builds, you also can make a pitch around community and like your own role as sort of an influencer. But, you know, at the end of the day on metrics, like that click rate, like the click to open ratio is so, so important to what the advertiser is trying to achieve.
Yeah. One thing I liked about Tim from 1440 is he could talk about their audience like the back of his hand, and he can tell me how awesome, and it's so persuasive by telling me how awesome the 1440 subscribers are. And I don't hear a lot of other people doing it that well. So that's great. What other, and again, anybody feel free to interrupt, I'll say that one more time. But what other ad products should we think about, if any, as a way to help advertisers? I think everybody here has like a primary ad placement, you know, logo at the top, somewhere on the top half of the newsletter, there's a 100-word ad or 50-word ad, maybe image or maybe not an image. Everybody has that. Some people have a secondary too. What else should we think about? Should we think about, there's sponsor webinars, there's so many different options, especially in the B2B world. What do you guys recommend?
Yeah, on the consumer front, for us at Ladders, like dedicated email products were a huge, huge revenue driver for us. So really listening. I mean, I was using our daily then to kind of figure out like, okay, this advertiser seemed to resonate a little bit better with our audience or this subset of our audience. Maybe through conversations with this marketing director, we could figure out a more bespoke offering, or they might have some idea or going to them with an idea. We were very big on spinning up additional like revenue driving email products. But to your point, it doesn't necessarily have to be a newsletter product. It can be, you know, a webinar product or some other kind of event. I still think your primary inventory in the newsletter is a really great way to understand which advertisers should be approached for additional offerings.
What were you charging for a dedicated email send? And what do you think is like the audience's tolerance for one-off offering email type send versus like your regular newsletter content?
Yeah, I love talking about this stuff. My daily we set up at like a 6K rate card, I think it was. The actual market value of that was probably around three. So what I went to market, I was like, oh, okay, it's 6K each, but you know what? Why don't we do this? Let's just run three of them at 9K. Did that, ended up like moving. We ran 7 days a week. So I just had to move inventory, move all that inventory.
Audience at that point.
So again, this is like pre-MPP. We're talking like over 2 million, but 15 to 18% opens. So 3K for the daily, let's say. The dedicated email were 35K. So you want one dedicated email. That was to the full audience. So I had scale there, but open rates weren't much stronger. And again, there's going to be more focus on that now. As far as how hard you can push the audience on those, it is a little push or pull. You can't be hammering constantly, especially what's interesting. The Ladders was sort of this professional audience. Like it was B2B-ish, even though in a consumer context. I would run four of those a month. I had ran the most of those I ran was at six in a month. That was probably breaking. Yeah. Four to five, we were safe at four to five, Ryan, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, look, we inherited a list there that was not, you know, this was kind of a different era of newsletters. What I'd say in the modern context is like, it's always going to come down to the relationship between you and the audience. And like, is this product a fit? Is this something that is interesting to my audience? I think like, you know, the polar opposite of our audience at Ladders is something like Jacob Donnelly's a media operator. If any of you are not on that for some reason, you should be subscribed to that. And, you know, Jacob does, dedicated deep dive newsletters with, he works a lot with Omeda. So I'm sure he's done it with Omeda. He's done that with different brands. And like those fit because it is like, you know, here are media products, B2B media products to this B2B media audience that you're curious about. And this is valuable content to you. So like, you know, if you're a healthy eating newsletter, you know, if you're a, you know, health or food newsletter and you've got like the perfect meal kit that fits exactly with your audience's interests, you probably have a lot of latitude there. If you're just kind of, you know, spamming people, you know, you may still need to run something that's not the best fit for revenue, but you're going to pay a downside on that on burning your list. But if it's a tight fit, you're not going to pay nearly as much of a price as I think a lot of people assume, if it's valuable content for them.
I was just going to ask, like, in your guys' opinion, in business, tech, AI, you know, those kind of broad niches, who does dedicated sends the best, in your opinion?
I mean, yeah, again, it's a very small B2B, it's a limited B2B example. Jacobs are very good. It's an old example, but one of my favorite ones I saw was from, actually inspired a few things we did at Ladders, was from Pocket, and their Pocket Hits newsletter did a series of dedicateds with the Wall Street Journal. And so, you know, Pocket's thing is, oh, we, you know, we're rounding up the best articles for you. And so, you know, doing that, and then just instead of random sources having just five Wall Street Journal articles, it was like a perfect dedicated product. I mean, it was kind of perfection. So that's like a good example of how nobody is going to start complaining and unsubscribing because you ran a, you know, themed article roundup from the Wall Street Journal. So that's, you know, that's what you're aiming for. Of course, that's a little unique because it's a content property, but you know, you can do good content on any vertical.
just to follow up, like for Joanna, like, so I would also make sure, like, I wouldn't go out cold to somebody that you've never, like, I wouldn't do a dedicated as a first time send ever, right? So it's always got to be somebody that you've ran with, you have some rapport with, like, you understand that your audience does connect with them because you don't want to burn that audience. And then I also wouldn't sell dedicated. It's like, you can't just buy, like, it's not a one-off. You can't just buy one of these. At Ladders, they were buying like quarterly or 6 month clips at a time, basically. It doesn't have to be quite that much, but I would never sell them as a one-off. And your angle for that is just the amount of lift, and you're doing this campaign for them and you want to see it deliver really well.
I'm sure it depends on how bespoke the campaign is, but if you were, say, charging like $2,000 for a normal primary sponsorship spot in your newsletter, what do you think is a fair multiple of that to charge for a dedicated email set? And would you say like double it to $4,000, or like what is, in your experience, been like a happy spot for that rate?
Yeah, I think in today's world, a 4 to 5x. So I think if you say like $8,000 to $10,000, that's fine. And then again, you could just discount as you bundle things together. That's kind of like always my philosophy of things, is like how to play it a little loose, like just discount as we scale things up. I think $8,000 to $10,000. But again, it's got to be somebody that's already worked with you and says like, oh, hey, you know, we've had such great traction with your audience. We're doing so many great things here. What else can we do, or how can we capture more? And then it makes sense.
Cool. Yeah, makes sense.
Cool.
I should call out the assist. Oh, sorry. I just want to call out the assist here and having an awesome advertising program, because like one of the metrics I think about a lot when we like decide what to track is like, oh, I'm getting unique stuff here. This isn't a campaign I've seen five other places. Like we started tracking the assist. It was like, oh, all of a sudden, like, okay, this is like stuff I have not seen before. Like they're playing an interesting space. So
yeah, I've been testing a new format where, because we're trying to build content like at least a month out so that we're not scrambling week to week when we're scheduling things. But that's given us a lot more freedom to figure out ad spots and then coming up with organic content to place like near it, above it, to kind of engage that audience and get them in that mindset. And then going to the ad spot, and we saw it work really well when we were running BetterHelp. Unfortunately, they like have an incredibly low CPC, so it's just not that fruitful. But we did like an editorial around therapy and benefits, and then we jumped into that ad position and it doubled like the average clicks that we normally see on that ad spot. So it was a pretty cool test.
That's awesome, Ryan.
Ryan, Jesse, any other kind of like upsells or cross sells come to mind on ad products? Like I love what we just talked about. Any other types of things make sense? And also, if you have any examples or strategies on how you bundle things, that would be helpful too. So let's say someone bought a primary ad or a small bundle of primary ads, and they're going on to the next thing. Like, how would you approach the advertiser about what the next campaign is? That's two questions, but let me know what you think.
Yeah. So initially, the way like bundling, it can be done a bunch of ways. I'm a big fan of like doing the basics really well before you do anything else. Like first and foremost, like let's sell out the primary inventory ad slots before we add the secondaries, like do everything consistently first. So with bundling, like it could be, if I have a revenue target I want to hit, I might want to set the price for the bundles. And then I know like, okay, I sell X amount, I hit that revenue number. For me at Ladders, it was more about, I want to move as much inventory as possible. So bundling, you know, anywhere from 20 to 30% discount on the bulk buy, I think is fine. You really want to make it make sense for them only to buy the bundles. And I never, ever want to sell a one-off for anything. It just doesn't do anybody any favors. I'd rather not sell than sell the one-off in most situations. So making sure the bundling like makes that happen. As far as like renewal of campaigns, if you're doing your bundles, like at Ladders, I started with like 3 for $9,000. And that was all of a sudden after two runs, I would space things out so we had time to tweak ad copy or landing pages if we wanted to. But typically there, I saw renewals pretty quickly after two runs. Like, hey guys, what are we doing next? I understand now there's a lot more competition and a lot more inventory to go around. So you probably want to be a little bit more proactive on that. But again, just staying on top of the advertiser campaigns, knowing where their clicks are at, where their benchmark wanted to be, and just communicating, hey, this is where we are now. And then assuming that next sale that they're just going to renew for another purchase.
If they bought like two bundles, like a bundle of three ads, for example, or they bought two of those, is there like an obvious next step? Is that six ads? Is that, you know, two dedicated sends? Is there a strategy?
Yeah, so Yeah. So again, I did use like very specific examples. So at Ladders, let's say it was like Morning Brew started buying a ton of ad inventory. Like once they were renewing, now it's okay. Like on our daily products, let's just do a quarter and slot these in. And then, I also have, like Ryan had pointed out earlier, jogged my memory a bit. I think he sent me that pocket email with the Wall Street Journal stuff and was like, can you sell this? And I was like, oh, I think we can. So then you're going to go back to your stable advertisers. Hey, I have this other product. Let's add this into the mix. And then ideally, I want to be running these people on like quarterly IOs. So, we're going to take, 12 of the dailies and 5 of these other products every quarter. And then it's just, charting up the deliverables and closing those deals regularly.
Got it. The final question around that for me is like, outside of the dedicated sends, is there any other ad products that make sense? I mean, let's ignore secondaries because I think those are kind of not very exciting, but like our sponsor webinar is a good idea. What other stuff are you seeing in the market that's interesting that people can do to help advertisers and so on?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a fan of the webinars. I'm a fan of like any of the event type stuff. I think are really good offerings as we see more and more of newsletter creators and creators generally building their audience out around like community identity, right? Like that makes an event make just as much sense as sponsorship, if not more so on the webinar side of things. So yeah, I'm a fan of any of those types of offerings. I'm trying to think. Right, you know of one that was like really cool that we've seen recently? Was there anything like super out there?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen anything massively out there. I mean, I think webinars great. Events, I mean, it is events. Events is where, especially in B2B, where the action is at now is, getting prospects in a room with the advertiser. If you can create great content around that, that's really, in person is back in a huge way. I mean, we're so far past COVID, it sounds silly to even say it's back. I mean, that's just part of the landscape now. It's like people want to be in a room to close this kind of business. So, I mean, it's part of why we're doing a conference to bring it back to the newsletter conference. But there's so much to be done there. You could do offline, webinars, just an offline, online events, bring someone into a community for an AMA if you've got like a Slack community. But, other than that, like, the toolbox is only so big. There's not, I haven't seen anything like that's knocked my socks off in the last couple quarters.
So I actually just one came to mind, flying, right? That whole, yeah. But like that's a very the brand Flying, they do they bought like an older print magazine for flying enthusiasts or people that would own jets, and they made this brand into like a really cool media brand. But they sell they broker deals on private jets and like probably some insurance stuff too. But that's like kind of in the SaaSification space more so than like the media sponsorship on that stuff.
Yeah, I still think that's a good example for this.
Yeah. I mean, I should say we're very focused on sponsorship here. And of course, to a certain extent, Jesse and I are just because our company's culture sponsors stuff. But like the builds, the interesting builds that are doing creative stuff are going into data products. Look at what like Payload/Ignition is doing with like, space-related data products and Ignition's nuclear industry. That's where you're seeing a lot of expansion is data products plus events plus sponsorship. Like everyone, as much as we're, very tied to the sponsorship channel, like everybody should be building multiple channels and have, at least a three-legged stool for their revenue. So, we do certainly advocate that to anyone we talk to about this space.
Any examples of those data products we should check out? I mean, who sponsors stuff, obviously, but like, there's a couple. Like, what are your top 4 to 5 that are doing interesting things? Media companies building data products that are interesting.
Definitely Payload, and I assume Ignition will do similar stuff. Punchbowl is building out a data product. Who else is doing anything in this space?
They got acquired, I believe. Lexi's building.
Yeah, they got acquired is building out a database of small business buyers. So that's another, very poor example. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. And there's Freight Waves, Marketing Max has an agency review type. I don't know if I would call that a data product, but in line with that. Yeah, I always love diving deep on those. I want to, obviously, feel free to jump in. I want to talk about events really quickly because you just, sponsorships for events, because you just did that. You have some sponsors for the newsletter conference. You've done these dinners. How did you think about pricing for these? So we don't need to reveal price and stuff, but like how do you, is I think a lot of people don't even know the benchmarks. We understand it for newsletters, but like, do you do attend on attendees or how does that work?
So, I mean, I could start filling this one and Ryan can follow up. I am a big believer that pricing is more like art than science in the sponsorship front. Like, there has to be like some concrete, you know, I don't want to be wildly out of market, but a lot of it is like kind of a feel of like, okay, here's the caliber of audience we want. This is the value that I think I would pay to access this audience. So it is a little bit of wing it. But as far as tying it to something a little bit more concrete, very much like, okay, we're able, you're selling similar to newsletter, you're selling your audience and your ability and like your relationship with that audience, even more so than newsletter, right? Like our Dine and Deliver series, we're getting 20 to 25, like of the best of the best newsletter operators in a room, invite only, and that kind of commands where the rates go.
Yeah, I mean, to follow on that, like the word I was going to say is just on vibes. Like there are no hard and fast rules. And I know this just comes down to like people always feel like there's some science, there's some real formula here. And like at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's a market. What will someone pay for it? And yeah, we're doing some calculations on like, you know, what is deal value of acquiring a customer for this kind of company. But at the end of the day, like you just have to go to market with something and see what the response is.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting tidbit is what is deal value for the potential sponsor and basing some pricing based off of that. Do you ever do it? I imagine everybody does this, like economics, like how much does it cost to do this event? How much money do I want to make from this event? Like, what's my margin? Like, that's probably a factor in the pricing too, right? Or not?
I mean, you obviously have to have view of it because events, especially in New York City, are very expensive to put on. So like there is a certain premium of like, yeah, I can really only speak to our thing here. But like, you know, if you're going to do this in the media capital of the world and be at the Time Center and be where the B2B audience lives, that's going to be pricier than if we went and did this in, don't want to insult anyone's home state here. And if we did this in like, Indiana or something, you can do that. But if you're going to do it in like a real media center, one of the coastal, centers, like it's going to be expensive.
Cool. Any other questions from anyone? I have one more question here, and this is kind of like one that's harder to answer, but I think all of us would love to see more advertisers buying in newsletters. What does it take to make the pie bigger? You know, why aren't there more advertisers getting into the space? What are publishers doing right or wrong? This is a discussion we've had in this community a couple of times, but I'm curious what Ryan and Jesse think.
Sure. So, you know, one thing I would say there, like what are publishers doing wrong? Certainly the old school, like the traditional publishers, what they have done wrong in this space for years is treating newsletter as, you know, as a value add, as a backwater. You have major brands out there, you know, the biggest news brands you can think of who have huge email lists and even interesting email products, and they're sticking programmatic ads in it more often than not. And it's really, you know, it's because they have sales teams that have been trained forever just to sell banner ad packages and print packages, and like newsletters came up at a weird time for them. So like that's one thing. It's just like then there are brands getting their hands around it. Bloomberg is getting their hands around this problem, but some of their direct competitors are not. So that's a big one. And then it's just a new channel, and like people are wary or uneducated about new channels, and ours does have, you know, things you need to learn. Is a 30% open rate good or bad? 3 years ago, it was fine. And now it's like, that's pretty low. These nuances that we swim in and live and breathe in. Yeah, but so many advertisers just have absolutely no idea about this stuff. So it's an education thing to some extent.
And to follow up on that, like, and especially on that education front, like when we were early-ish at Ladders, like 2018, most of what I'm reaching out to, they were just running Instagram. They weren't aware of like this newsletter channel, period. We had like a Slack channel that was basically like kind of Ryan's like B2B-ish Instagram feed. So just like reaching out to the sponsors, hey, here's my audience, here's what it is. I think you need more salespeople doing that, right? Like not just, oh, we're a new scaling newsletter. Like here's the out of the box thing. I'm on Beehive. We'll try the ad network, maybe hire a salesperson just to plug away at other newsletter advertisers. I think you really want to be like aggressive in prospecting. Tools like Who Sponsors Stuff are really great for prospecting in the space and also inspiring ideas for outside the space. But I think very much people that, you know, when I'm going through the grocery store, I'm looking at like, oh, where is this product placed on this shelf? Like, oh, who are they trying to reach? Like just being hypercritical on the prospecting front. And the more people we see do that on ad sales, we'll naturally see a lot more new sponsors.
Yeah, I think we need more top of funnel, right? And that, especially on the education side. It's like we're kind of doing that with hand-to-hand combat right now, but it'd be nice if there was something that like some campaigns or content that educated more advertisers on how to use this platform, because I really think half of them don't really have any insight, and they would be a lot more successful if they did, right? And they probably work with the better quality publishers too if they did. Cool. Okay, that's all I got. We'll wrap up here in a second unless there's one more question. Alrighty. So if you want to go to the event, thenewsletterconference.com. If you want to get intelligence on advertisers who sponsor stuff.com. Anything else, guys?
No, that's it. Yeah, grab your tickets. They're the numbers are all on the website. It's going to be a sold out event, and yeah, we look forward to seeing a lot of you there and to having Matt on stage.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. And for people who are on the podcast or wherever they listen to this, I'll put a link to the tickets and a discount below. But yeah, it sounds good. Thanks for coming on, Jesse, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, man.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening. I hope you're enjoying this podcast, and if you are, we are hosting a live virtual event for podcast listeners. Me and Ryan Carr are going to do a Q&A, fireside chat, and hang out with our listeners who love the podcast. To get access to that, you just need to do three simple things that will help us grow the podcast faster and reach more people. Number one is to leave a five-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Number two is to subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can find that by searching Matt McGarry on YouTube. That's where we publish the podcast video. And then number three is to send a screenshot of both of those things to me so I can send you an invite. Send that to my email, which is matt@newsletteroperator.com. That's also linked in the podcast description below. And that is it. That's all you need to do to get an invite. We will be doing this live call, or potentially multiple live calls of our listeners, after we reach 100 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and 1,000 YouTube subscribers. So the sooner you do that, the sooner you'll get the invite, and the sooner we'll be able to do this call with you, and it will be a lot of fun. So I hope to see you there.